be awkward if we were live that whole time.
I mean,
I feel like you owe me a countdown, Mason. It's not that hard to give somebody a countdown. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Zero.
I feel like we're actually live because we're not talking. I feel like this is inappropriate, and I need a new technical producer. You can't just like put people live. It's just not how this works. All right. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, a man who has never played Black-White Tokens because he's not a maniac, Michael Hinderocker.
That's like the greatest compliment anyone's ever given me.
I just appreciate that you're a down-to-earth human being that doesn't fall for the BS of Mason Clark.
It's just, what can I say? I'm not registering Sacred Cat. It's not going down like that. I'm okay losing. I'm just not putting that card in my deck.
I'm going to lose, but I'm going to lose with dignity.
Yeah, I mean, probably going to do some losing anyways, so
literally Danny messages me, so did you see the new Jace? Do you know what you can do with a no-dipper session? And I'm like, Danny, I need you to calm down. Yeah,
I cannot register either of these cards and be real happy about it.
Yeah, well, if you want to pick up those cards for some reason though, you can do it at either of our sponsors. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com, and well, actually you can't pick them up from the Mana Source, but you can from their sponsor, Effusion Gaming. Already in the comments, the new Jace Plus doubling season. We will probably talk about that soon. But don't forget to check out our sponsors at the Mana Source. They support us by allowing us to continue doing this content with monetization. It's really helpful. They also do that for other great content creators though. So if you check out their website at the Mana Source, it's a great place to find new up-and-coming Magic content. We really appreciate them. You can also check out their sponsor at Fusion Gaming to pick up your box of Ixalan. Oasis Games doesn't currently sell Ixalan boxes, but if you go there, you can absolutely pick up that sealed product. But Oasis Games is the place to buy your Magic the Gathering singles. If you use the code CCMTG at checkout, you get 15% off of your first order. That's CCMTG. And you'll get 4% off of every order based in code. Would that be good? Oasis is pretty amazing. They're also hiring right now. So if you're in Salt Lake looking for a job in the Magic the Gathering card market, Oasis Games is a place to do that. So check them out at mtgoasis.com and check out their listings on ZipRecruiter. So let's get right into the show, though. We don't have any new patrons this week, but every week on the show, we like to give a special shout out to our newest patrons. We had a couple people edit their pledges to go up in the amount that they're donating. The reason that people would do this, by the way, is there's different rewards at different tiers, right? So we had somebody go from $5 to $10. And one of the reasons to do that is actually relatively soon, we're actually late on it, we'll have a quarterly Skype call with our $10 a month patrons, allow them to do a live call. Actually, Patreon is, the reason that we're late on it is because Patreon told me that we would be getting into the live beta for doing live streams with our listeners. So once we're in that beta, we'll actually go ahead and do that with those people. But that's one of the benefits that you get at $10 a month. At $5 a month, which some other people adjusted to, you get access to our Constructed Critics Facebook group. That means you get to submit for the deck doctor. You get to see our deck lists anytime that we're working on something for a tournament. We're typically going to post it there. So patreon.com/ccmtg, become a patron of the show. Everything that's donated is really appreciated. If every listener donated just $1 a month, it would change our lives. We'd be able to quit our jobs, do Magic content full time. It'd be really cool. So, awesome. So let's go into our Patreon question of the week. So this week, one of our patrons asks us, is there an easy way you have found to figure out what a specific matchup is about? And once you find that, is that how you build your sideboard plan? Michael, you start with this one.
So I think this is kind of an interesting question. I guess, sometimes you can just basically play a couple of games and it becomes pretty obvious. But sometimes as you play more and more, you start realizing that, like, games where you draw more of a certain card or where certain cards are resolving or staying in play are going differently. And I think this happens a lot. Like, a lot of the time it's pretty easy, right? Like, if we're looking at, like, Mardu vehicles, right? A lot of the time, the games where you draw a Toolcraft Exemplar into Heart of Kieran into Unlicensed Disintegration or whatever are just going to be really easy. So, in a sense, you're going to win some percentage of games in every matchup just with, you know, by outdrawing your opponent. But I think that trying to figure out what cards you're looking for in opening hands, whether you're looking for sort of faster hands or slower hands or hands that have flexibility or hands that are really linear, I think all of those things are things you can learn in testing. And more than building your sideboard plans around this, because both people are going to have the chance to change, so sideboard games might be a little bit different. In game one specifically, I think just knowing what hands to keep and how to sequence goes a long ways.
Yeah, I think that there are two kind of different questions coming here, and I think Michael is covering that pretty well. Game, when you figure out what the matchup is about, right, you figured out what game one is typically about. And now it's time for you to test post-board games and figure out what post-board games are about to give you that advantage. I actually think you need an idea of how sideboard games look in order to even understand what hands you're supposed to be keeping and things like that. So you need to build a sideboard plan far before that happens, right? I mean, I need to know what my game ones look like, where my weaknesses are before I can build my sideboard plan. Not really. So I guess you're kind of answering your question. The answer to your question is kind of yes. But you also need a game plan going into those sideboard games.
Yeah, and I think that then you're how you're building your sideboard, often you'll start with an idea of a sideboard plan, but as you actually play sideboarded games, you might find that the cards you had hoped would be really good are either great, just like you'd hoped, or they're maybe a little bit worse than you had hoped, and then you can kind of readjust your sideboard, go from there, and it's... I would say more than anything, learning matchups is kind of an iterative process. So you go through once, and then you sort of go through again, and you just keep trying to expand your understanding of, you know, how your game plan and your 75 come together to give you cohesive ways to win a bunch of different matchups.
I think one of the early weaknesses in my early Magic playtesting was actually not playing sideboarded games against my opponents in playtesting. That's actually one of the reasons that I think Magic Online is, and even other avenues of online testing, is so valuable when you're playing against a random opponent, is because you want a sideboard. Like, they want to play a match of Magic. And it's a great way to understand what both sides of the corner, like what those game ones are about and what those sideboard games are about. I hope that this answered your question, because it feels like we kind of went around your question, which might have been how do you develop the sideboard plan? And I think it's just identifying what game one looks like and if there are cards that you can bring in to shore up that. And when you're playtesting, oftentimes you're probably not playing with a 15-card sideboard. Many times I just am like, all right, well, I'm going to board in these four cards in this matchup, right? And then maybe I'm tracking the kind of cards that I'm bringing in. This is if you're sitting down, right? And then before the tournament, you're like, okay, I have to make sacrifices. What matchups do I think that I can shave cards in the sideboard on versus what matchup do I need the sideboard cards that I was playing with?
Yeah, I think that's a good answer.
Yep. Awesome. Well, let's go on to our next segment, which is hashtag always improving. Hashtag always improving is the point of this podcast. We believe if you're not getting better, you're probably getting worse. And we want to be doing what we can all of the time to try and improve. Magic's a hard game. There's a lot that goes into it. Michael, what have you done this week to try and improve life or just Magic?
I have, again, had a pretty easy week in terms of how much Magic I've actually played, just without a lot of events coming up. It's been kind of nice to take a little bit of a step back. And that's allowed me to do some looking at... I really like tracking Legacy results on Magic Online and kind of seeing how that format is evolving in a world with less terminuses. So I've had a lot of fun doing that this week. But as far as serious playtesting, I haven't really done a whole lot.
When you take a break like this, what are the kind of things that you like to do to relax? Like, you know, Magic Life balance can be pretty hard. When you don't have to play events, what do you typically do?
So a lot of the time, it just comes down to playing if I feel like playing, but not sort of forcing myself to grind through a bunch of games for the sake of it. I mean, I obviously, I still really, I really like playing Magic. I mean, so sure. It's still just a leisure activity, regardless of, you know, even when I'm preparing, I'm having a good time with it. But it's nice to play games where, you know, if you want to play, you play, and if you get sick of it, you just set it down and move on to something else. So just finding balance with, you know, getting to hang out with my girlfriend, just do some fun stuff. And I think that in general, knowing when to take a little bit of a break keeps me more grounded and keeps it makes it easier to focus on preparing again when it comes time to do that.
So, Michael, I've been playing Magic for 6 years, 7 years. And I had my first O2 drop in a tournament that qualifies for a Pro Tour.
You play enough of them, it's bound to happen, right?
Yeah, so it's really funny. I had a lot of people apologize to me, ask me what I, like, oh, was your deck just bad? I'm like, no, my deck was amazing. I played really well. I mulliganed six times. There was probably one mulligan that I shouldn't have mulliganed, and that's probably, like, my mistake of the tournament. And, you know, I think that I'm in a really good place in Magic right now. I've never felt... So, I mean, I've also never had an O2 drop before, but it didn't feel bad. Like, when you O2 drop a PPTQ, it's like, oh, man, I can't believe I wasted this time. Like, I could have just dedicated my day to stuff. Or, like, a 1-2 drop. I have a lot of those. Sure. Like, but this time it was like, okay. Like, I got a little unlucky this tournament, and that's okay. I got to talk about mulligan decisions with Matt Klang. It was... kind of surreal. I feel like I really picked a good deck for the event. I don't know. It's weird. I feel like I'm in a good mental space right now. I listened to a podcast.
It's nice to just be able to move, just to say I did what I could, right?
Yeah. And it felt good knowing that I could have that kind of result and not be upset about it, because I know that I'm going to have another chance, right? You know, one thing that I think I had trouble with the last 2 years of Magic, right, with my wife's miscarriages and then with the baby, like, everything felt so important. And now that we're kind of becoming parents and, like, understanding what time management looks like, I know I'm going to have another shot, right? I know I'm going to more GPs. I know that I'm going to probably be able to hit my goal this year. I'm already off to a strong start of trying to hit bronze. You know, I'm only one point away from wood level. Like, it's a good feeling to feel like I have time to have a full-time job, do this Magic podcast, do my YouTube content, and also still be a dad and play Magic at the same time. And it feels really good. And I remember seeing a thread a few weeks ago about how Magic content creators don't believe that they have time to play Magic, that it's basically impossible. And... I want to encourage people that, like, that's not true. Time management is important, and knowing what you can do is more important than getting burnt out. And I feel like I'm in a place where that's not happening to me anymore. And it sounds like Michael's in a place where it's not happening to him. And I encourage you to find a place where it's not happening to you, because Magic is really fun. And if you're not enjoying it and not having fun... it will turn this thing that you love into this thing that makes you miserable. And there probably isn't a worse feeling in the world. So the fact that I was so happy, even though I O2 dropped, it was cool. It was weird. It was a weirdly cool feeling. So yeah, that's my always improving moment this week, is being able to manage my life. It feels good. So let's,
Well, I mean, when you look at those events too, I mean, the players are just good. Sometimes it's like there's no shame in losing to other players who are well prepared.
Absolutely.
And it is kind of a zero sum game, and sometimes you're going to be on the bad end of it, especially, you know, on a one tournament sample.
Yeah.
And even if your win rate was 80%, you're going to lose two in a row sometimes, right?
Yeah. And the thing is that, you know, I played against decks that I thought I had a good matchup against, and every game felt competitive. And it's like, man, like, I'm mulliganing to five and, like, keeping up with this against good players, right? These players are good enough to be on this online RPTQ. Like, clearly I'm doing something right. I'm heading in the right direction. I just haven't felt like I've been playing Let's Go to Magic in a long time, and it's attributed to Magic Online being accessible for me, being able to talk about Magic, you know, talking about Magic with Corey this week, talking about Magic with Matt, being able to talk about Magic with Michael every week. I just haven't felt this way in a long time, and I really encourage players to figure out the balance that they can have in their lives to feel this way. You know, because if Magic's not fun for you, like, you love it for some reason. So, like, figure out what that reason is and then find out how to get that look back is all I'm saying. So let's go on to our – so we don't have a deck talk for this week. So if you – and this is my fault. I feel like I should do a better job in that group. So every week on the show – every week I'll try and submit a request for a deck doctor. And that's my bad. So sometimes people are like, if it's not too late, and it's like, yeah, we recorded already. But we'll try and get that more often. And if you're a patron of $5 or more, we can talk about things that we love, the things that we would change, and where we think the deck stands today in any format. So we'll go over your deck list and kind of talk about our thoughts on it. There's no card of the week this week, but every week that we can on the show, we're going to give out a playset of a very important card in Magic for the time being. You know, we've given out some pretty awesome ones, and we want to continue doing that. If you're a patron of $5 or more, or $3 or more, you're eligible for that one. $3 or more. So let's go on to this week's episode, though. So in the past, we were doing mega rankings, I think, every month to every 2 months for formats. And with Standard recently, it's been like a 2-3 deck format. So mega rankings for a while, like probably since Green White Tokens, just hasn't been that great.
It's like we could do like 4 different Green White Tokens variations, right? It's like, right. Well, this is the 3 Evolutionary Leap build, and this is the 2 Evolutionary Leap build.
Right. And, you know, with Marvel, with Healy, with with everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
There just hasn't been a lot of ways for us to do a Mega Rankings episode. But this format's super interesting in the fact that I think that the top, 11, 12 decks are all reasonable things to take to an event.
I looked at this top 10, and they all look like decks you could justifiably play.
Right, and green-black's not even on the list. Spoiler alert, there's no green-black deck on here.
Sure.
Like, so this is including motor results and paper results, including IQs. Like, it's basically everything. Online PTQs, paper RPTQs, things like that. So let's go and start with our number 10 deck. And we're just going to go really hard on these. So for those who haven't been listening very long, in Mega Rankings episode, it's the whole show. We just are going to talk about the decks, what they look like, how we feel about them, and their their matchup. So coming in 10th place, we have Green Red Pummeler. The list on the screen is a fling build, you know, playing Hotship Oasis. And Michael, this is more of our, I feel like everybody on our team has dabbled in this deck quite a bit. What's a reason that this deck would show up in a top 10?
If you don't see a lot of Walking Ballista specifically, just the card Electrostatic Pummeler is really powerful, and I feel like the metagame has sort of swung away from green-black a little bit, so very few Lilianas, very few Walking Ballistas, and those are kind of the two cards I don't really want to play against. Outside of that, like, it's a 3-mana creature that if you untap with it, it's about 50-50 to just kill you on the spot. Right. Yeah, it's pretty clear what the appeal is, I think.
Yeah, I think that this deck, like, I remember when we were, like, testing for Pro Tour Kaladesh. And, like, I think we played, like, 3 games with this deck. We're like, okay, this is bad. Put it away. And everyone else did that, right? But as more cards have come into the set, right? Invigorated Rampage is a huge game for the deck. Fling is a small game for the deck. You know, the deck has gotten, its mana cost has gone down and down, and the deck has been streamlined into, like, a focused machine that's this bristling Hydra deck in some games, and this Electrostatic Pummeler in some games. But you can't play around, like, you can't...
Yes, very few cards are good against both Bristling Hydra and Electrostatic
Pummeler. Exactly. And so that's where the deck's, like, play comes in, where it's... equity into the format happens. Is the deck amazing? No, not really. Like, it's a good deck that will probably win some PPDQs. You know, probably you could probably cash a GP with this deck, I would say.
Oh yeah.
You know, I think the deck is fine. And I think that it really shows the power of a card like Blossoming Defense, for example.
Yeah, Blossoming Defense is, I mean, it's powerful in a lot of shells, but, like, this is probably the shell for Blossoming Defense. Like, this is the deck where it feels like the number of games you win is almost directly proportional to the amount of Blossoming Defense.
That you draw? Yeah.
Yeah, this deck's just really good when you... Or if you're good at drawing Blossoming Defense, this is a deck you will enjoy.
How do you feel about the kind of the look of these decks these days? You know, 21 lands, 4 Attune with Ethers, some number of spells. Like, what are your feelings on... I mean, this one has 4 Harness Lightning. Go back to 4 Harness Lightning. But yeah. 3 Servant, so they kind of switch those numbers.
Yeah, it's pretty... It looks like this one is playing 2 Tireless Trackers in the main, which is...
Actually, all of them that I was looking at were all playing 2 Tireless Trackers.
Interesting. So I guess maybe that's what the stock list is at the moment. But basically, this deck has been... It's mostly a solved main deck, it feels like. Like, at least this is the way that within 2 or 3 cards of this that people have been building this, since Fling.
Yeah,
basically since Fling was... So pretty much since Amonkhet, this deck has been built within a
card of this. How do you feel about Greenbelt Rampager in the 75?
I am curious. I'm not sure how Mono Red would sideboard against this deck. I like it less now that they're playing... They have access to, like, more Chandras and more of that kind of stuff. But I would imagine that it's also probably reasonable against control decks. It's probably just pretty good in all the games that you have to move away from Electrostatic Pummeler a little bit.
That was actually going to be exactly what I was going to say. I wonder if it's just a plan that you come in with when you're like, I need to board out Pummelers. I don't want to, like, dilute my deck with weird mana cost creatures. I think that that Greenbelt kind of fills that role.
Yeah, so when we were trying to... When I was helping Danny and Alex list for their Pro Tour, we came up with Rampagers and Lathnu Hellions in the sideboard. Kind of for those kind of games. And they're not bad. The problem, ultimately, is that because your spells are so pump-heavy in the main deck, you struggle to sideboard into, like, a completely fair deck in the boarded games. It's very hard to board out, like, all of the Invigorated Rampages and Flings and...
I find that you typically don't, right? Like,
right,
typically,
exactly.
Your game involves keeping in a couple of Invigorated Rampage simply to give yourself... Like, just simply to... I mean, make Bristling Hydra your win condition, for one. I don't, like...
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
I mean, you kind of have to.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? This deck on screen looks really streamlined. I honestly wouldn't be opposed to, like, just jamming this at my next event. I have Pummeler sleeved up. I might make the changes to do something like this.
Yeah, I think this deck is really fun. There's nothing quite like
your moto, you know, agrees with you. You jammed,
I'm not someone.
He jammed a million leagues with this deck.
It's just enjoyable. I'm not someone who usually plays a ton of games just for, you know, just to play. But I think this deck is really fun. I just really like the card Electrostatic Pummeler.
Yeah, and if you're looking for this list, we like to give credit to, obviously, the people who build the lists. On your screen, it has the person's user's name right there. So let's move on to our next deck. A deck that people are saying is bad.
Interesting.
And I fully disagree with that. I actually don't think this deck is bad at all. We have Godpharaoh's Gift. So this is the Jeskai Godpharaoh's Gift deck. What are your thoughts here, Michael?
As played by Mike Sigrist and pretty much all of the CFB guys at
GDM.
They had a pretty good showing with it, and they did some interesting things. Calling this a Godpharaoh's Gift deck is maybe even a little misleading. It's really a Gate to the Afterlife deck.
Well, it's
Right. I mean, you get Godfrey's Gift with it, but this is it. This is a gate to the Afterlife deck, and it can do some really cool things with it. It's designed with that in mind.
Yeah.
And I found this deck to be pretty explosive and surprisingly resilient.
Yeah. When I first saw him cast a Treasure Mage at the GP, I was like, what in the world is he going to get? And then he got Gate to the Afterlife, and I was like, what does that do? And I got on my phone, and I was like, oh, I see what's about to happen.
Yeah,
I know what this guy's about to do.
This one isn't playing Refurbish anymore, but there are some really cool things that this like base blue-red setup can do. So both Insolent Neonate and Walking Ballista are really powerful with Gate to the Afterlife. Insolent Neonate's really cool because you could play it out in advance and then still trigger Gate with it turns down the road. And Walking Ballista, obviously you can trigger it for free, but you can also cast a Walking Ballista for zero, and that's a pretty common play with this deck, to like have a Gate and just cast it as a loot to get like the requisite number of creatures in your graveyard.
Yeah, so why don't you talk about what Gate to the Afterlife does for those who don't know?
So Gate to the Afterlife is a 3-mana artifact, and then whenever a creature you control dies, you gain a life, and then you get to loot. And then if you have 6 or more, at any point when you have 6 or more creatures in your graveyard, you can pay 2 mana and sacrifice it to get a God Pharaoh's Gift from your graveyard, hand, or library and put it into play. So it's basically additional copies of God Pharaoh's Gift, but it also can provide you a little life cushion against mono red sometimes. It makes one of your plans against control to basically play a Gate to the Afterlife and then just attack them a bunch of times with creatures.
What are your matchups like with this deck? You have polarizing matchups. Are you kind of a 50-50 deck?
So I haven't played as much with this list just because I didn't really seriously consider it for Denver. But my guess is that your Zombies matchup is outstanding. I would imagine Green-Black and Teemer are both favored for this deck. I would imagine your mono red matchup is a little bit sketchy. Just in that you're a deck that doesn't necessarily block that well, and you specifically need to bring back an Angel of Invention. And I would imagine you can also be a little bit soft to a braid. I would think pre-board your control matchups are pretty bad, but if you look at the sideboard, they're getting to board in a bunch of Chandra's, Dispels, Negates, and go up to I think 3 Mausoleum Wanderers, so I would imagine that the sideboard of games against control are actually fairly good. Your nemesis is probably just people drawing their 1 or 2 of Scavenger Grounds.
So I actually don't think that's true. When I was thinking about beating this deck, it felt like between Champion of Wits and it feels like so often the things that are in play are actually just going to loot again, and your hand never feels like. I don't know how much you played against this deck, but I played against a lot of Moto, and their hand is, like, never empty.
We played against it a fair amount. I played against it a bunch of times in one league with Matt, and then I played with the deck through a couple of leagues, and you can sort of run dry on action.
Okay.
Sometimes. The Scavenger Grounds, I mean, plus a clock or plus a braid. I mean, you need some sort of... You need something else going on. But the fact that Scavenger Grounds doesn't often have to actually eat itself...
That's true.
It meant that a lot of games it felt like we were playing an Eldrazi deck that had like Scavenger Grounds in the main deck. And any game we drew it basically... That was it.
So we've already kind of spoiled that Green-Black is not on this list. Do you think that this deck is a huge contributing factor to that?
I don't know that it's a huge contributing factor as much as I think the format in general just got a little more hostile to green-black, and people found ways to beat mono-red with some of the other decks as well.
Yeah, I would say that when you look at, like, green-black's, like, good matchups, a lot of them are falling off, right? Like, Mardu's a great matchup for green-black. It's still somewhere in this top 10. But outside of that, some of the other decks that we're going to talk about, they're good for you, right? Like, Mono Red's obviously in here. That's a good matchup for you. But, you know, you have to build your deck in a very specific way to beat things like Zombies. And Green-Black did have to do that, right? So early on, like, we talked about that a few weeks ago, where Green-Black is like, hey, I need to beat zombies and monoreds specifically, and this is how I have to build my deck to do that. And when it does that, you start to lose equity in other matchups, right? Like ramp becomes a very bad matchup, things like that. And I think that like the your ability to beat decks like this are almost out the window. I think that this deck is actually the reason I didn't play green-black at the RPTQ. I just don't think that you are in a reasonable position to beat Godfather's Gift decks.
It's very difficult. I completely agree with that assessment.
Let's talk about the next deck, one that I have no idea how this deck is seeing play. We have blue-black control coming up next. This is a deck with Supreme Will, which is a great card. Grasp of Darkness, one of the best removal spells. Fatal Push, Censor, Scarab God, one of Kalidas, some Torrential Gearhulks, one Wrath in the form of Yeheni's Expertise. I don't know how this deck is winning games.
I mean, if you look at this deck's metagame share relative to some of the others, I think it's basically all from Magic Online.
It is.
So
how are you 5-0-ing a league with this deck? It can't power through. I don't know. Like, I just don't feel like Glimmer Gearhulk is like good enough right now.
I think this deck is probably pretty cold to Mardu. But outside of that specifically, I think just being a little bit more threat dense can help your mid-range matchups out a little bit, where they lean so heavily on negates in the boarded games, like Teemer specifically,
sure,
that just having more kind of Kalitas, Scarab God, more of that stuff going on can help in those matchups a little bit. I haven't played with this deck at all.
I have never played with or against this deck. I've been playing a lot of Magic Online, and I have not played against this deck.
But it looks like it had some pretty decent finishes. It looks like there was an X2 as well as an X3 in the RPTQ this last weekend. There was an 8-0 in a PTQ a couple of weekends ago. 6-2 in a mock. So it's had some decent results. It looks like the 6-2 deck was playing main deck Gifted Aetherborn. So
yeah, I saw that.
It looks like it's basically, you get better spot removal and you lose Fumigate. So maybe the thought process is that if people are starting to build their decks to beat Fumigate specifically, or are just people are loath to, you know, play into sweepers quite as much, this deck maybe plays a little bit better against individual creatures. I think your 1-for-1 removal spells are a lot better in this deck than they are in blue, white, or blue, red.
Sure. I honestly, I'm not opposed to a deck like this being good, but like when I see a deck list like this, I think, man, like if this deck just had a pull from tomorrow, like that might change the whole deck for me. But I guess like Scarab God kind of does that for you. Now that I'm like thinking about it, it kind of fills that role for you so that you don't have to worry about that.
Oh yeah, I mean in this style of deck, if you play a Scarab God and aren't basically dead already, your opponent can't possibly beat you.
Yeah.
I mean, you basically have to be dead on board.
Okay. Do you think that this deck is a direct response to things like, you know, Godfarer's Gift and Approach and Teemer being like some of the bigger decks?
I am unsure how good your matchup against, I mean, I guess you get, it's interesting. I think this deck would match up pretty well against Teemer. I would think your blue-white matchup is probably okay, but probably closer to, like,
I would assume your game one is really bad against blue-white, but I would assume your post-board games being able to, board in more counter spells and maybe planeswalkers.
I don't know that your game one's actually that bad. You have a lot more hard counter spells in these decks, it looks like to me.
Well, you do, but every time that you draw a Fatal Push, it's like you got nothing, right?
Right, but they're playing just as many removal spells, and although
as
they have
you?
Some
sure,
targets, they're
true.
Still not good, right? I mean, like, Blessed Alliance is still
sure.
not going to be a very good Magic card.
That's a good point.
So you kind of have similar amounts of dead cards. I mean, they also have 4 Fumigates, which just actually basically do nothing.
Sure.
And I think maybe that having, like, Negate and Disallow in your deck in Game 1 would make that matchup not bad. It's hard to say, having not actually played much with or against it, but I mean, I can see I can see how it could be good. My guess is your mono red matchup is probably not very good.
Let's talk about the next deck. We have, in seventh place, we have Ramp. This is... I'm so torn on this, dude. I want this deck to be good. But, like, the way this deck is being constructed right now, I just can't get behind.
Yeah, this deck in, like, 27 lands and a bunch of Weirding Woods and Gift of Paradise is just not what I want to play.
Like, you basically are forcing yourself to draw Hour of Promise. And that's just not how I think the deck should be built.
Yeah, this is an interesting take. I mean, it's just like a bunch of spot removal and sweepers, right?
No, I think that playing it as a blue-red control deck is correct. I don't think forcing yourself into drawing Hour of Promise is correct.
Yeah, I think playing 27 lands honestly probably puts less pressure on you to draw specifically Hour of Promise just because, I mean, I can't imagine
because
you
then
not
you're drawing
getting...
lands. Why is that? What does that matter?
Well, because you're gonna hit your first six or seven land drops in basically every game.
Sure. The other problem, well, the other problem with that is because you're playing Weirding Wood and Gifted Paradise, you aren't turning on your shrines as easily. Whereas if you play things like Beneath the Sands, so I've seen a couple of lists on that are playing like. They're playing Spring to Mind off of their ramp enchantments, right?
They play after Weirding Wood with it.
Yes. Yes. And that to me seems like a good bridge, right? I don't know. This
yeah.
I'm like the ramp guy, and I can't get behind this deck, so this is a lot.
It reminds me so much of the Anointed Procession deck. It's like a deck that looks well positioned, but man, you just gotta play 27 lands, 4 Gift of Paradise, 4 Weirding Wood are just not. I don't want to register that.
Yeah, I really, really don't like Chandra, Torch, and Defiance in these decks. Like, if there's advice that I can give you, it is that you are incapable of protecting that card. Do not play it. Like, do not play it.
Yeah. It's interesting, but again, I have not been impressed when I've tried these decks.
I would say that if you're gonna build this deck, like, test it, like, and also innovate. I don't think that there's a correct version of this deck being found. I think that Hour of Promise is easily one of the best cards in this set, so it has power. I just don't know. I just don't know there's been a correct version yet. And yeah. Also, I don't know that we've been in the correct metagame for it. If blue-black control, though, and blue-white control and teamer are going to be the decks that you are seeing, though, I think that you could easily find a world where ramp is the correct build. But I don't think it's this one.
Yeah, the real problem is just that all the ramp spells outside of Hour of Promise are bad at best.
Yeah, there's... Yeah, right. You have to...
If we had Sakura Tribelter, this deck would be great.
Yeah. Completely agree. Yeah, let's move on to the next deck. Oh, and for those wondering in the chat, the deck list is actually on your screen. So if you actually look on the computer, the list actually shows up while we're talking. So we're going to go on to our sixth place deck list, which is Mardu. I actually think this deck is worse than Ramp right now. You could not convince me that registering Mardu is correct right now.
Yeah, I just really, really hate Walking Ballista in this deck. I hate it so much.
I don't think this deck has a good matchup right now, like, personally. That's probably hyperbole. I think that your deck always has good matchups when you have your best draws in Mardu. But the problem is I think that your deck is just clunky. And, like, you are a worse mid-range deck than all the other mid-range decks now. And, like, we're not in a format where you get to be the best mid-range deck. We're in a format where there are really good mid-range decks.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine this deck benefits a lot from control seeing more play. I mean, the matchups you really want to play against this deck a bunch with are the control decks. It's just really difficult for them to be a bunch of Planeswalkers, Hearts, Scrap Heap Scroungers. I'm sure those matchups are good because they've always been good, and there's just no way to build control decks. Even the builds playing basically no creatures or actually no creatures, just a lot of the cards that control has line up really poorly.
If you look at the deck on the screen, or if you just look at the previous results, these decks are all over the place.
There doesn't seem to be a consensus on the exact numbers or like how many Gideons or how many vehicles we're playing or all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I do think that there are a lot of people getting the value that they've gotten out of playing Mardu for the last year, and they're applying that to this format. The problem is that eventually I don't think that will work out for them. I think that a lot of people are trying to force Mardu in a world where it doesn't belong right now. That doesn't mean that it can't belong. If we're not in a format full of other great mid-range decks, then that's not true. Then Mardu becomes good. But the problem is that we're in a format with mono-red and Teemer as the best decks, probably, and this doesn't line up well against that.
I could see if there was a little, if the control decks continue to rise, especially if they're able to push zombies out a little bit, I would be much happier playing Mardu.
I didn't even think of it zombies is probably somewhere in that top three or four too, right? So.
But the more control decks you play against, the more I'm into Mardu as a choice. I mean, you've been good in those matchups. I know those matchups are good.
Sure.
So the more that happens, the more I'm into it. And I think that probably both Teemer and Red are maybe slightly unfavored, but they're certainly not awful for you.
Okay. I would think that it would be hard for you to construct a deck that beats Teemer, Red, and Zombies all at once with Mardu.
I totally agree with that, which, again, comes back to if Blue-Red and Blue-Black start pushing Zombies out and Teemer starts slipping a little bit, I think.
Sure.
This deck is just always good against control.
Sure. Well, let's talk about one of those control decks. Up next, we have Blue-Eyed Approach. Coming up next, I just didn't think we'd be saying that, Michael.
Yeah, people really, really like this deck. I don't know that it's great. It looks like, it continues to put up some 5-0s, a number of 6-2s, and 5-3s in PTQs, but every time I played this deck, my biggest issue is just that we're playing a bunch of, there's just a lot of kind of bad cards surrounding.
I think you're really good against zombies, and I think you're pretty good against Teemer. You are legitimately good against those decks.
But your mono red matchup is pretty sketchy. It really requires you to draw the right mix of lands and spells. And you don't play a ton of ways to facilitate that sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of problems with this deck. But I think that, for our listeners who might be, at a PPTQ, right? They might be able to say, I expect mostly zombies and Teemer. And when that happens, this would be a deck to pull the trigger on.
I mean, I think this is probably the Fumigate deck right now. And Fumigate is well positioned in a number of metagames. So if you're playing in a metagame where you're looking at it and thinking, I don't think any of these decks can beat a Fumigate, then I think it makes a lot of sense. I think ultimately what I would say is, despite Blessed Alliance and Fumigate and Approach, against mono red, if you just actually look at the mana cost in this deck, there are no one mana spells. You need to hit your first 7 land drops in a 25 land deck.
Well, that's disingenuous, right? Because a lot of your spells get cycled.
Right, but what I'm saying is that when you're actually looking at the spells you're casting, right, cycling is a cost, and when you're having to cycle a bunch to continue to hit land drops, in a lot of matchups, you just get to Fumigate and it's fine. Against mono red specifically, my experience had been that some combination of clunkiness in hands and just needing very specific cards in that matchup because you don't have time to cycle a bunch made it seem pretty tough.
And also, you don't have cheap interaction against mono red, which is...
Yeah, Yeah, like Blessed Alliance, you want to cast it as a 4-mana spell, but you often have to cast it as a 2-mana spell.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff is tough. You need
and
to
cycle cast out. And if they have a carry set, it looks really bad.
Well, I mean, you can do it with the trigger on this deck, but...
That's fine. They still dealt you an extra 2, and...
Right. Yeah. Like, it happens, but the other... And then, like, you cycle cast out, but then you need it for Hazoret. So you just end up in this deck where you're, like... It's difficult to hit your land drops and interact meaningfully at the same time.
Yeah, I think there's, like... For those listening, know that I moved to Jeskai control a while back because of Mardu, right? There's like no way I was going to play blue white, or red blue because I wanted all of it, right? Like, we can go on to our next deck, which is blue red control. But I think that there's a reason that like the numbers are split higher between these two decks, right? It's because they both have something the other one needs. You know, whether it's Magma Spray or whether it's Fumigate, they both need something from the other deck.
Yeah, they're both close, and I mean, I know that with blue-red in particular, what I know, Saito has now played that at back-to-back GPs and is either undefeated or, like, X1 against everything that's not mono-red.
Yes.
And, like, 1-7 against mono-red.
Which is crazy, right? Like, he's... I think he also has cut down on the number of specifically Magma Sprays, right?
His GP Minneapolis list was 4 Magma Sprays.
Yeah, I mean, he's got no hope then, man. He's got no hope.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's basically... Neither of these decks are great against mono-red, but I think blue-white has maybe slightly more game there.
Yeah.
The blue-red deck is just very, very poor against mono-red, and it's not really a card selection thing. It's just a, like, what cards can you even play, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we look at the deck on the screen now, they've kind of moved away from kind of expecting the deck to function even. You know, when I think about how I would build this deck, I would think that, like, Hour of Devastation is the reason that you could justify playing blue-red instead of a white deck, right? Like, it takes away the need for something like Fumigate, and this list is only playing one.
Well... I think that fundamentally the decks are just constructed a little differently.
Talk about that.
So this deck is playing Torrential Gearhulk, but a lot of its interaction is cheaper. Like both Magma Spray, Abrade, Harness Lightning all interact cheaper than most of what the blue-white deck has. You have more hard counter magic, so more ability to keep problematic permanents from entering play. And my guess would be that Hour of Devastation is not good in every matchup, and even in the matchups where it should be good. Like, I've had it not kill Bristling Hydra before, or, like, not actually kill Planeswalkers that were in play, or just things can still go wrong with Hour of Devastation in a way that Fumigate doesn't
run into.
Quite have. So I think it's a little bit of just a stylistic difference. Torrential Gearhulk also just mitigates the need for it a little bit in that so much of the time you can cast it during combat, flashback, or removal spell and block something.
Sure. What are your... I think one of the key cards that we're kind of not talking about here, and a card that I was really high on early on in this form, is Supreme Will. Has Supreme Will just done enough to put control decks somewhere into the metagame?
Well, it's interesting. In the blue-white deck... It often gets used just for, like, the move 4 cards off the top of my deck.
Sure. Okay. Keep going. I'm interested.
But in this style of deck, I think that it's really more that it's another thing you can flashback with Torrential Gearhulk. Like this blue-red list in particular is playing 2 Supreme Wills and 3 Illuminations. And all of those are cards where... The front side is okay, but not great. But it's really nice to have like cards that you can cycle that then you can Gearhulk back. And it's really nice to have modal spells to Gearhulk back. So I think it does just enough. It doesn't always age well. And I think playing too many of them in blue-red in particular can be problematic when you don't have Fumigate to clear up any board state. So I think maybe 2 is the number that people are looking at more often in blue-red. But in blue-white, you're often just trying to dig for approach of the second sun, so the impulse mode is better.
I'm going to say that I think that the fact that the card is so versatile that you could say all those things about it is actually the reason why blue decks are coming back. I think that that the fact that my main use of this card is an impulse mode, but if my opponent does something that I don't want them to do, I can often stop them instead.
Yeah, I think
it's pretty powerful.
It's definitely powerful. I think in the blue-red deck in particular, where you can get run into problems with it is when you don't have a way to just end the game or recover from unrecoverable board positions. You're playing a bunch of, like, if you're playing a bunch of sensors and 4 Supreme Wills, you're not always going to be able to impulse into actual counter magic.
Sure.
And I think that's maybe where you'd see a little bit of difference. Like with blue-white, you would have Approach will often do it as what you're hitting. Fumigate will often do it, or like Cast Out. So you have a bunch of stuff that you can impulse into that can kind of clean up whatever. Whereas the blue-red deck, its removal is so much more conditional that it maybe just needs to lean a little bit harder on spells that always counter things.
You pro or against Nicol Bolas?
That's such a tough question. I have not played with Nicol Bolas in a while now. Have you?
Honestly, I think it's just to be cute. Like, you could convince me that it's correct, like, over the 4th Gearhulk, but, like, I don't know. There are going to be matchups where they're probably never going to beat a Nicol Bolas. So maybe it's correct just to have one in your 75. Like, I could be convinced of that. And it's relatively free. Like, you play, like, what, a Sunken Hollow and...
He's playing a Sunken Hollow, and then he's playing...
He's probably playing one. I didn't even remember the list that I sent.
Sunken Hollow. He's playing 2 Cycling Lands.
Yeah, that's relatively free. That's probably good for the deck.
Well, I certainly don't think it's hard to make black mana on turn 7 or 8 or 9. Question is really whether Nicol Bolas is... The question is whether it's not whether you can cast it, it's whether having another 7 drop is good, right?
Well, especially in your main deck.
Yes. My guess is this card is, like, pretty good against Teemer in game 1, especially. Like, if they don't have access to negate, it seems like a good kind of haymaker.
I think it's probably... Oh, go ahead.
It's probably good in the mirror.
Yes, I was going to say... I don't hate it against green black probably can never beat it if you resolve it, unless they've already gone wide, which in that case you're probably dead anyway.
You're kind of dead, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's fine. It's funny every time I see a blue red control list, I'm like, yeah, this is what I want to do, and then I play some games with a blue red control deck, and I'm like, man, I can't draw the right cards ever.
Just don't test against mono red, and I think you'll be mostly happy.
Yeah, unfortunately, most of my testing is on Modo now. So
you're pretty good in all the matchups where your counter magic is actually good. So when your opponent isn't playing like Bomat Courier into Bomat Courier, Bomat Courier, you know.
Ooh, that sounds rough.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our third place deck list. We have zombies coming in at 3. Not really surprised anybody. I think that zombies has just carved out a very big part of this metagame. Some of the differences in the list, though, including this one, is cutting down on removal just a little bit and then playing some more haymakers. So this one specifically plays Kalidus.
Yeah, so usually people are playing 21 creatures, and there seems to be a little bit of debate about whether that last creature should be Kalidus or Metallic Mimic. And then I think kind of the standard now is to play all 4 Liliana's Masteries and then all 4 Deadlands with 19 Swamps. And then the question is just on Scavenger Grounds versus Abbey and how you split them and
whether... I think another question is, well, I don't know that it's a question, but I think one thing that's defined is you want to play all of your XX black spell.
Yeah, I think that's...
What is that called? I'm like off the top of my head. Dark Salvation. Thank you.
It is Fatal Push and Liliana's Mastery in the same card, basically.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that card is just, like, most of the reason to play this deck, I think. That and Crypt Breaker, right?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Dark Salvation is the card I lose the most out of this deck. It's probably not particularly close. Why is a deck like this, a deck that's so defined and, like, so clearly one strategy, why is it so easy to take? Why is it winning a Pro Tour and then staying in the format?
I think just the creatures are, like, surprisingly good for a tribal deck. Like, you looking at these creatures, like, Crypt Breaker is great. Dreadwanderer is kind of bad, but it's good against the cards that you would think would be good against this strategy. Like, you can sometimes actually beat sweepers, and it's just like a 2-power 1-drop, right? It's just Savannah Lions or whatever, so it's fine. Relentless Dead is very skill testing to play against and with. So I think that it, you know, both it raises the expectations of your opponents and also gives you a card that has a lot of play. I mean, Diagraph Colossus is obviously, like, you just look at all the creatures, and all the creatures are really good. All the removal spells are, like, this deck doesn't have to play any, really, even, like, B-level cards. Dreadwanderer is the worst card in the deck by a lot, and Dreadwanderer is totally fine.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you get to play a land that's a removal spell. You get to play Liliana's Mastery and Dark Salvation, plus Push and Grasp. Like, it's one of those decks where you just assume, because it's like mono black, kind of derpy guys, that none of these guys could really be that good. And then you look at the card quality, and I think its creatures might be, like, better than Teemer Energies.
But that doesn't sound like a thing.
That sounds like a lie, right? Like, how is it that we're playing mono color tribal, and our creatures up and down the curve are better than a 3-color deck?
Yeah, Diagraph Colossus, to me, has always been, like, the thing that I'm like, why are you a card? I actually, like, if there's one card that, like, if you cut from this deck that it wouldn't exist anymore, I think it's Colossus. It's
probably any of them.
That could be true, too.
Right? It's like there aren't good replacement options. There's, like, exactly the right number of creatures for this
deck. And it's crazy to think, too, because they knew that they wanted zombies to be a deck, yet there's an extra whole block in this format.
Yeah.
Does this have any of those cards, though? It might not have any of those cards.
Well, it doesn't have any of the BFZ stuff, I don't think.
I mean, like, there's a Kalidus, I guess.
Well, sure, but I mean, that's not...
And Grasp of Darkness, actually.
I think you could build this deck without Kalidus or Grasp of Darkness, and you actually wouldn't lose that much.
You think so?
I mean, it would be a little unfortunate.
I guess everybody else loses that kind of stuff, too, so...
Right. Right. I think if you just had, like, Metallic Mimics and the extra Fatal Push, it would be, like, mostly whatever. Sixes.
It'd be whatever. Yeah, the deck is good. It's not a deck that I enjoy. Do you enjoy playing this deck?
Well, I mostly just feel that I'm really bad every time I play it. There's, like, a shocking amount of decisions, and it's very tricky. And the sideboarded games play out really differently, because you, like, often... This deck has a lot of flexibility within the games, even though you can't really change the composition of your deck that much. And I think that, like, knowing when to make zombies or draw cards with Crypt Breaker or, like, attack for the most damage, when to play your Relentless Dead on turn 2 versus turn 5, like, how you sequence things with Diagraph Colossus, there are just so many tricky things with this deck that I, as someone who hasn't had a lot of incentive to, you know, just, like, be the best zombies player I can be.
Yeah.
I feel out of my league every time I try to play it.
I can't do it, dude. Like, and it's funny because, like, I play a lot of, like, Merfolk, and people are like, yeah, it's just a fish deck. I'm like, this is not a fish deck. It's not a fish deck at all. Like, you have way more decision trees than you ever have with Merfolk. This deck is way harder to play. And it's not my speed. So but I think the deck is really good in this format. And there's a reason, like, you know, there's a reason that Teemer is rising, because it has a good zombies matchup, and it can have a good zombies matchup. And there's a reason that Greenlock is falling, and it's because zombies can be really hard for that deck to attack specifically it and Mono Red and Teemer at the same time, because then it just gets pushed out by everything else. And I think that zombies is kind of the one of the main pillars of this format. One of the other main pillars is our number two deck. We have mono red aggro. There are so many opinions about this deck. Like, it is crazy how many different opinions people have about how you are supposed to build this deck. And I think that two Soulscar Mage is correct. I think you want exactly 10 one drops. I think the rest of it is kind of flavor of the week, like, to be honest. I just think that it's too hard to know exactly the numbers you want and everything else, and you just need to take your best guess. But I think that, like, 4 Falkor Math, 4 Bomat, 2 Soulscar Mage, some number of Arcar Crasher is correct.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're basically locked into the 8 one drops in Bomat Courier and Gorger, and then Earthshaker, Onkrop, and at least 3 Hazoret.
Man, I think if you don't play the Soulscar Mages, like 2 of them, I think you're wrong. I think you're just wrong.
You certainly could be, but I know Sam Pardee made top 8 at Denver with, I believe, none in the 75.
That's true. But Jerry Thompson talked about the decks that people were playing, and he was like, Soulscar Mage is bad, but I should have just played it. Like, I was just wrong for not playing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the reason for that is, like, you need something to happen there. It actually just didn't matter as much what it was. I mean, that's why people played Village Messenger, right? It's because it didn't matter. But I think that Soulscar Mage gives you that thing to do. I agree with the 3 Hazorettes. You're pretty much locked into that. The deck is also, there's the most, it's like the craziest resilient mono red deck. Like, I think about the Abbot of Carol Keep mono red deck, and it is not as resilient as this deck. This deck does so much. And, like, the number of times that I beat opponents playing mono red on Modo, because they're just not activating their lands, like, is way too many. Like, I think this deck is also just hard to play and hard to understand.
I think the margins are just really slim in general with this deck. I think that because of cards like Ramunap Ruins and Sunscorched Desert, you will very often actually get punished and lose winnable games by missing out on a single point of damage early in the game here or there. And understanding how to sequence, how to prioritize your creatures, how to, like, when you attack, that's going to, like, lose you a bunch of creatures, but will get in a few points of damage. Like, there are just so many little things with the deck that you can get punished for that I think this deck is extraordinarily difficult to play. Despite the fact that you get a lot of free games where you just run your opponent over, it, in my opinion, is the most difficult deck in the format by quite a bit.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that this deck's really difficult. I really like the deck list on the screen, by the way. So if you're looking for a mono red list to play right now, I picked this one because I thought it looked sweet. I liked basically all of the card choices. I think that the person who built this deck had a very clear game plan in all of his matchups. I would definitely recommend checking this one out. Coming in at number one, we have Teemer. This deck is the golden child of Standard. Like, people are playing the crap out of this on Modo. Have you played a league recently?
No, not in the last few days, but
I have played against. I have played a league where I played against Teemer 5 times.
I was gonna say, looking at the PTQ this week, it looks like, well, the RPTQ, it looks like there were 9, at least 5-3 finishes for it.
Yeah. Yeah,
Teemer is crazy.
Teemer is everywhere. It is the best deck in Standard. What happened? What? Like, I feel like 3 weeks ago or maybe 4 weeks ago, we were like, this is a bad deck, don't play it. Like, was it just being able to put Skyship in the main? Was it figuring out how to specifically play against zombies? Like, what happened?
I think the format just got to a place where things got narrow enough for a minute that you were really able to focus the way that the deck was being built. But I think this deck is just, like, fundamentally pretty good against zombies. I think both Skyship and Glorybringer are extremely good in that matchup. And I think your mono-red matchup, when you build it with 4 Whirler Virtuosos, is at least reasonable. I don't know that you're like super favored in that matchup or anything, but Bristling Hydra is very difficult for them to beat, and Whirler Virtuoso as the game goes on can be really tough as well.
That's what I noticed when I was testing for this RBDQ. It was just like, man, I don't know how my Bonnaroo opponent beats me when I'm playing a Bristling Hydra.
And Long Tusk Cub has its moments too.
Which was true when I was playing Pummeler too, so I don't know why I didn't just transfer that over, right? When I'm playing Pummeler, I'm like, yeah, all I want to draw is Bristling Hydra. I don't know how a Monoroid deck beats me when I play that card.
Right. The difference in this deck is that you just basically also get Whirler Virtuoso. Right? I mean, it's mostly just Pummeler, and we cut all the pump spells for more removal, and then we're playing Whirlers over Pummelers. Right.
Yeah, I think that this deck has a good Mono Red matchup. It has a good Zombies matchup. Those are the other two best decks. And then now the other decks are trying to prey on this, you know, through other means. And this deck, because it's established, can then start to adjust.
And I would say basically, for better or worse, none of your matchups are, like, super dominant. Like, it's not like you're, like, 80-20 against Mono Red. You're probably, like, 60-40. And you're probably not 80-20 against Zombies. You're probably 60-40. But I think that this deck has a lot of play, and you have a lot of ability to play to your outs. You're managing your energy resource as well. So I think there's just like a lot of little things you can do really well in this deck to slightly improve your percentages here and there.
And chat's kind of talking about the power of being able to have Negate out of the sideboard, and I completely agree. Having Negate out of the sideboard really allows you to have game in matchups that you wouldn't think that you would have game against. And that's one of the powers of playing this teamer deck, is that even some of the Pummeler lists are now like, well, I'm just going to play Negate on my sideboard too. Like, it's just a really powerful thing to be able to do out of a deck like this.
Yeah, I think this is also probably the best Sky Sovereign deck, and Sky Sovereign is very good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that completely. So that's it for this week. Don't forget that you can go to our Patreon at patreon.com/ccntg to become a patron of the show. We just talked about Standard for like an hour and a half. So this was a good Mega Rankings episode. We'll be doing these whenever we can again. Like, they are kind of taxing on us to like really dive into the format, but they're really fun and I think really helpful for our listeners. And we hope that you understand like what this Standard format looks like and what you can expect from it. Go to patreon.com/ccntg to support the content. $1 or more per month, anything that you see fit is really appreciated. What is our next goal right now? I don't even know. I'm going to say our next goal is to get Michael on a dinosaur.
I'm pretty sure it's not, but...
It's upgrade the audio and video equipment. Actually, yeah. So I bought a new headset, for those who noticed a few weeks ago. It actually doesn't work with my thing, so... We already did all of that. So I'll be changing the goals. I need to go over these again. The one after that is actually getting playmat sleeves and stuff available at Oasis Games. That's at $800 a month. This is something that we request for all the time. So buying sleeves is like super expensive because if they're going to print them, you have to print a lot of them. So check it out, patreon.com/ccmdg. We'd love to get that stuff available for you. Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Handerocker. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
Mason, even though you like to give a countdown, you don't like to give a countdown, where can people find you?
I normally give a countdown, but if you want to have my countdowns live on Twitter, you can find me at SOVMason and on a podcast this Wednesday, Spencer.
Are you doing a podcast this Wednesday?
I am. I'm doing a podcast this Wednesday. Common Knowledge. I'm going to give Kyle Novus, the host of the show, a countdown. We're going to go 3-2-1 live. We're going to see how he handles it. Are you ready?
Yeah, we're going to see. Well, super awesome for Mason. He's going to be joining Kyle on Common Knowledge, one of our other two podcasts on this network. So we're really, really excited for you, Mason. And thank you so much for all that you're doing for the network. We really appreciate it. You can find me on Twitter, Spencer13H. You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. You can find the Constructive Criticism Facebook group and the Constructive Criticism family. So just search Constructive Criticism family, ask for a join, and I'll be happy to add you. If you're a patron of $5 or more per month, we'll add you to the Constructive Critics group. You can also join the Discord. It's actually on our bios page. So all of these links are on that bios page on constructivecriticism.com. You can also join the clan by messaging me on MTGO at Spencer13Dev, and you can tweet at us with hashtag would that be good. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we'll read it. And we missed a week last week, so I think that brings us to it has to be like the, what is it, the 16th? What date?
Sure.
Or the 14th?
No. We did that one last time, so we're on the 17th.
The 17th, okay. We have playing entirely too much Hearthstone, but man, it's such a fun game. Taking a break from Magic has been great. Hashtag the good. Hashtag Burn Mage. I actually don't think that's true at all. I think Hearthstone is actually a terrible game. Like, legitimately terrible. I think that it's worse than Magic in every single way. I think it's worse than Pokemon TCG. I think it's worse than Eternal. I literally think it is the worst online TCG by a significant margin.
But tell us how you really feel, Spencer.
I hate it. And the only reason that it ever gets play for me is because I'm in bed on my iPad and I don't want to play Pokemon that night. That's like the only reason. It is so bad. It is so bad. Oh, anyway. All right. How do you feel about Hearthstone, Michael?
I'm mostly indifferent.
Really? So tell me how much you play it.
Never.
So clearly you really love it.
Yeah.
Alex Kirby says, this week on Finance Friday, we talk about hashtag price spike and throw a few picks your way. Hashtag MTG Finance, hashtag really good, hashtag CCMTG. Yes, we have a writer that does finance articles on our website every week on Friday. So you can check out Alex Kirby's articles every week on Friday. He also has a Patreon because he wants to start doing podcasts and videos and stuff like that. So check him out every Friday at constructivecriticism.com. He'll be probably the latest post on those Fridays. So we really appreciate Alex and all he's doing. I listen to his articles every week on my app Audiophy. I love his articles. You should check them out. Just drove 14 hours after a PPDQ to see the total eclipse. Hashtag weather good. Hashtag sacrificing goats to Manny. What were you playing?
That sounds like such a long drive.
I want to understand two things.
Wait, oh, you think the goat tokens are related to the deck?
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, he's just sacrificing them to Manny during the eclipse.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that makes way more sense. I don't have any more questions.
Okay.
All right. The city in Nashville is so calm right now during the eclipse. Hashtag that'll be good. I slept through the eclipse.
I'm pretty sure
I assume you also did too.
Yeah.
So we were in Denver, and we didn't drive through Wyoming because we didn't want to hit traffic. So we drove back down the other direction.
We took 70 back instead of 80.
And then we got home, and then we slept, and then we woke up, and the eclipse was over. So we missed it.
But so that's okay with me. I don't regret it.
Your hand is Power Plant, Tower, Temple, Cavern of Souls, Worm Coil, Thought 9. Which land do you lead on? Hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4. So 4 lands. All right, you're on a mold of skip. 6. I assume
you bottomed here. Yeah.
I think you play Temple.
Yeah, that's. We talked about this in the Facebook group a little bit, and I think Temple was the consensus, although there was some argument.
I think you play Temple because it gives you the most upside. I assume you agree.
Ended up falling on the Temple side as well.
Yep. Tired of getting wrecked by Jade Druid and Pirate Warrior. Let's work some of this frustration off. Hashtag FDG Fitness. Hashtag good. You could also just like play a game that, you know, isn't terrible instead. Why am I feeling this way about Hearthstone right now? I don't know. I don't know why I'm feeling this way. I'm giving Hearthstone a lot of crap. I play it sometimes. So clearly it's not the worst game in the world. It's just the worst. It's just the worst TCG. Andrew Felder says, could not acquire Bize at GP&D, but will shortly acquire a deep dish pizza. Hashtag, would that be good? Dude, that does sound good. Mason, did you get a deep dish pizza while you were there?
I did not. So we went to the Promenti Brothers, which is like this famous sandwich place, me, Danny, and the guys from my local area. And we got these huge sandwiches, which will come up on later on hashtag.
Oh, I saw that. Will that come up here?
Yeah.
All right. All right.
Later, guys.
Thomas says, I tell students often that, yes, math matters after high school. Want proof? Ask my round one storm opponent. Hashtag magic educates. Hashtag really good. Yeah, my school teacher wife always asks me the simple math questions because I just, yeah, I do math all day way too much. Do you think about things like in small increments now because of magic? Like when you think about math, is everything like divisible by small numbers and you just do the math in your head, Michael?
I mean, I always do all the math in my head. That's just...
But you do it by small numbers now instead?
I don't know. I don't know how my brain works. Sometimes it's functional. Often it doesn't seem to be, so...
All right.
I do the best I can.
All right. So, anyone want to pack battle me? Hashtag MTG, hashtag would that be good. And it's two packs of Revised Edition.
I mean, it's going to be awkward because both the packs are probably going to have like four basic lands.
I'm going to say that we Little Bank these. So for those who don't know what Little Bank is, what you do is you get a group of people that buy the same booster pack and you open them. And then whoever has the cheapest rare in all of the packs wins all of the cards. So if you ever, just all win some packs at an event and you are down for some gambling, Little Bank it. It's the way to go.
That's great. It's great, although it might be harder with Revised, because it might sometimes be hard to tell what the rare was.
And then there's a rare. Then there's Uncommon 1 and Uncommon 2.
Sure, but it's... Unless it's a dual land specifically, or like a Shivan Dragon, I'm probably not going to be able to tell you what the rarity of any of the cards are, so...
Sure.
Specifically might be a little difficult.
She goes after everyone in that video. She took an L and turned it into a W. Hashtag would be good. This is about Taylor Swift's new song. I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about that yet. Michael, how do you feel about Taylor Swift's new song?
Much like I feel about Hearthstone.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Michael, what'd you learn this week?
I learned there are, like, a lot of standard decks. Like, yeah. More than I think of when I think of them. It just, you kind of don't notice it because you're probably not really going to play 10 standard decks in any given format. But when you're like, oh, man, I could realistically play...
You could justify 10 standard decks.
If not 10, close to very close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, everybody. I learned this week that Mason is incapable of giving a proper countdown. So we'll see you guys all next week.